the Lions do not concern themselves with the fact that there has not been an Against the Grain episode in quite some time. The Lions do not concern themselves with Andrew's hatred for 2001, A Space Odyssey. The Lions do not concern themselves with the fact that sometimes it seems like it is so over, but whether it's us or the football team in Detroit, these Lions are so back. So let's roll the music and talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday, bright and early at 7 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. To stay in the loop, make sure to follow us on both Instagram and TikTok. We don't want you to miss out on anything we got coming up. We will be kicking off our K-True Sports Hour with Around the Hedges here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges, so to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. Since this is our first episode, since we all came back for the fall semester, I'm going to do a little bit more of an overview of how the few major Rice sports that have been playing in the fall have been doing. We're going to start off with the Rice women's volleyball team. They might be as hot right now as any Rice sport has been in recent history. They are 13-8 overall, but 9-1 in conference play. They are on a 9-game win streak heading into a 5 p.m. Friday tilt against the Pirates of East Carolina. That game will have concluded by the time this airs on K-True, and their next game after that is Sunday at noon against the Charlotte 49ers in Charlotte. After that concludes, they have another weekend or two of conference play, and then they will head into the conference tournament, where we can expect to see them make some noise with the way they've dominated the American Athletic so far this fall. The Rice women's soccer team just wrapped up their regular season with a disappointing loss, but finished the season at a strong 9-3-5, 3-2-5 in conference play. They have qualified for the American Athletic Conference Tournament, and they will play against the Golden Hurricanes of Tulsa at 1:30 p.m. on Monday. The internet is unclear on where that game is taking place, but I'm sure if you want to tune in to some Owls soccer, you can. The fabled Rice football program is 4-4 in their first season under new head coach Scott Abel and his triple option military style offense. They just came off an exciting double overtime win against the Huskies of Connecticut in double overtime. Oh, I said that twice. By a score of 37-34 last Saturday. They are playing tonight, which is Friday, so this game will be concluded if you're listening on 96.1 FM, against the number 25 Memphis Tigers. That game is at 6 p.m. on ESPN2. And they are upcoming next week. They are home again against the Blazers of UAB, which is arguably the most winnable game they have left on their schedule. It's a tough outlook here for the Owls. They've battled hard to get to 4-4, but their remaining games are against number 25 Memphis, UAB, a very strong North Texas program, and then on the road Thanksgiving weekend against South Florida, who I'm not sure if they're currently ranked, but they have spent time ranked this season and is one of the strongest teams in the conference. So the path to bowl eligibility is there, but it will require at least one more upset win from the Owls. But after last week's performance against UConn, anything is possible. Our hometown professional sports teams are making some noise as well. In particular, the Houston Rockets have started off their season with a little bit of up and down, but they are on a 2-game win streak coming off dominant wins against the Brooklyn Nets and the Toronto Raptors. Garrett's goat Tari Eason had 22 points against the Nets, and KD dropped 31 as he gets off to a strong start against the Raptors for the Rockets. We are going to get now into a more in-depth breakdown of the NBA scene this year in Houston and the entire Lone Star State. Julian, take it away.
Hello, Ian. It's great to be back. Since it's the first episode of the year, we should probably start off with some introductions, considering we've got some new people on board for the year. So I'm Julian. You'll remember I am this podcast's Houston team sports fans for the most part. We will get into Texans talk later, but I'll throw it to my right over here for the next intro.
It's only been 30 seconds and I'm already sick of you, Juju. Let's get it started. with the Dallas Mavs, my squad. David, who are you talking about today?
I'm talking about the Rockets, standing in, even though I am still Dallas through and through, but so be it. Seth?
Yeah, and I'm Seth, and I'll be talking about the Spurs and the GOAT, Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah, so I guess how so we have three different sports fans here, but we're going to talk about the Texas NBA teams. Where are we standing? We're going to sort of take some time to compare how all three teams have done so far. It's still early, of course, but some headlines for all three teams so far. So I don't know. Who wants to get started?
Dude, I feel like the Rockets or the Spurs should start this one. The Mavs have been who we thought they were, so why don't y'all take this away?
So like what was alluded to earlier by Ian, we really have been up and down so far in the season, starting off the season with that double OT loss to the OKC Thunder, where they were very competitive with the championship favorites. But one of the biggest stories for the Rockets so far is that with Fred VanVleet being out for the season, this team is really looking for playmaking and ball handling, and they're looking for that from Amen Thompson. So he's really going to need to take that next offensive leap to be able to create and make some good plays for this Rockets squad.
Yeah,
and
have we seen that yet, do you think? Because, yeah, going into the offseason, or going into the season with Fred's big injury, it's like it's going to be Amen Thompson, or people are saying even Reed Shepard had to step up and be that guy, which might be a little rich. But how has filling the hole for Fred VanVleet looked so far, do we think?
I think it's looked really interesting so far. Even though Amen hasn't been able to do as much, he still is bringing a lot to the table offensively, along with Reed Shepard. Ime Udoka has just shown that he's willing to experiment with how this offense looks, and as a result, they are first in offensive rating at the start of the season.
Yeah, I think Amen has been very good this year. I mean, we've seen, like, the offensive growth for sure. The shot is still not there, sadly. I was so encouraged seeing him let so many fly against the Thunder, even though none went in. And yet, we're four games into the season right now, and Amen Thompson has yet to make a three on the year, which is a little depressing.
That's great. Yeah.
But he still looks just so twitchy. Like, I feel like he tightened up the handle some of the offseason, because you see him, like, when he has the ball on the perimeter, he's just snatching guys' ankles. Like, he's so quick, and I feel like even if the shot is not there, like offensively, he's much better this year than what we've seen in the past.
We saw the Rockets start out with like a big lineup, right? Starting both Steven Adams and Şengün, and then some of the other guys, right? We've sort of, in the last couple of games, I got to admit, I've not been able to watch a lot of them, but what I've seen
Houston from native Julian Puerto.
Yeah, there you go. What I've seen from the box scores, we've started seeing Josh Okogie. Mm-hmm. Get a little bit more minutes. I know he's obviously not a big, right? And yeah, if y'all can't tell, I'm not, you know, the biggest NBA guy, which is why I am a
host for a reason.
Yes, host for a reason. But educate me on that. Like, is that something that Ime is going to want to continue with going forward, or are we going to see the double big lineup? Like, what do we think about the adjustments being made so far?
I think they've been pretty successful, especially offensively. The biggest concern right now with the double big lineup is the defensive end. The Rockets really have been bleeding more so in like transition because these guys are just a little bit slow. And with Amen having to take more on the offensive side of the ball, he hasn't been as stellar defensively. He's obviously still a monster, but there's things to look forward to, and this defense does not look as good as it did last year.
And to me, David, I feel like that's like the biggest concern, because you think about this team that essentially has no point guard for the time being, and their transition defense also sucks. So we're going to see a team that's more prone to turnovers. And basically, outside of Amen Thompson and then Tari Eason when he's on the floor, like, who is getting back in transition? Do you think Şengün, 38-year-old Kevin Durant, 30-year-old Steven Adams are running back to play defense on guys? Like, they're just going to be getting torched all year, no?
Yeah, it's concerning. And we'll see how Udoka ends up adjusting. Maybe we do see Aaron Holiday brought in later into the year. But
I actually love that adjustment.
Yeah. So is it fair to say, like, much has been said about Amen Thompson's, like, athleticism. Outside of him, do we think the team is probably lacking a little bit of that, even though the offensive rating has been so high?
I don't know if I'd necessarily say the team lacks athleticism. I mean, Jabari Smith Jr. is also a pretty solid athlete. I think this is just a slower team. Like, naturally, that's what comes when you play such a big lineup. Like, everyone in the Rockets starting five is over 6'10", other than Amen. So when you play that big, just naturally you're going to be slow. But I do think there is still, like, athleticism with this team and, like, a vertical presence because of Amen and Jabari.
Gotcha. Speaking of athletic presences, let's move on to the Spurs, where Wemby has had an absolute, like, fire start to the year, to put it lightly, right? I believe the Spurs are still undefeated as of last night. Seth, take us into what's gone right for the Spurs so far, man.
Yeah, the Spurs just moved to 5-0 last night. And, I mean, Victor Wembanyama, 30 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 blocks, just, like, the most in a very long time. And it's just kind of like he's ascended to being the best player in the league. Because I think the debate this year a lot has
been the best player
in the league this season so far.
Okay.
There.
Okay.
Because obviously
Giannis has had a good start too.
Well, Giannis has been good.
Yeah.
What I'll say about that is that if you look at, like, on-off numbers, which the Spurs are plus 22.7 points per 100 possessions with Wemby on the court, and plus 1.1 with him on the bench.
Sheesh.
So he's like 22-point swing, and Giannis is only a 13-point swing. So if you look at that, you can. I think the argument for Victor Wembanyama paints itself in a way.
Yeah, maybe for an early MVP candidate, I guess. So Wemby obviously has been great. You know, when he got drafted, people were gonna, like, we're saying this guy's gonna be really good. Can we attribute any more, or, like, any of the success to the pieces around Wemby? They've got a lot of, you know, young talent on that team. De'Aaron Fox, I believe, hasn't played a lot out, you know, this year, right? So, what can we say about the team around him, or is it really just Wemby, just carry job?
I think, I mean, you got to look at the guards, which is De'Aaron Fox has been hurt, but you have Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper, both of whom this year have been very good. Like, Stephon Castle is 26-5, Dylan Harper 15-5-5 as a rookie. And the interesting thing about that is that those have been their two best players, but two best players outside of Victor Wembanyama. I mean, you can make an argument for Devin Vassell, but I think I'd say Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle.
Harper has really looked ready as a rookie.
I will say that's one thing that is huge, too, because typically, like, rookie point guards or shooting guards, guys that are expected to be playmakers, like, struggle. Like, getting big assist numbers as a rookie is extremely rare, and Dylan Harper averaging 5 already, like, it's obviously easier when you have Wemby and you can kind of just throw the ball up there, but, like, as a playmaker, he does look like a ready-made product already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think VJ Edgecombe and Cooper Flagg have taken a lot of the rookie narrative so far this season, but Dylan Harper is a real contender for Rookie of the Year.
I think that's a good shout. All
right, well, let's go back to the Wemby best player. Outside the on-off, you said best player this year. Do you think by the end of the season he could be considered just best player outright over guys like Jokic, Giannis, Shea, Luka?
I mean, personally, I'm always going to make the argument for Jokic. Like, I think...
Yeah,
I think
especially
he should have,
like,
won
the on-off. That's Jokic's bread and butter,
right? Yeah, yeah. But, like, they reinforced the bench a little bit more over in Denver this offseason, so you wonder if that's gonna change. But yeah.
Go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always make the argument. I think there's, like, a clear top four right now with Jokic, Shea, Giannis, and then Luka. But I think Wembanyama can definitely be fifth, and I think he could elevate himself into that same tier with those players if he keeps performing at this level.
No Shangun? No.
Okay. What about that other white boy from LA, Austin Reeves?
Yeah. Hey. We've had a lot of scoring in the start of the season, no?
A lot of 50 bombs.
Yeah.
Austin Reeves, 50 bombs.
Lauri Markkanen.
Lauri Markkanen, 50 bombs. Shout out Andrew Fox, man. He'd be salivating if you're here right now.
Yeah. So safe to say that 5-0 for the Spurs, you know.
I want to make a comment here. Is this a Mickey Mouse 5-0? Because the opponents have been the Mavs, the Pelicans, the Nets, the Raptors, and the Heat.
The Heat have been good.
That's one of the worst strength of schedules in the NBA probably so far.
The Heat have been good.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, they always say, you know, you can only beat who's in front of you, right? And, I mean, I think the Spurs, and again, not big ball knower here, but it seems to me like the Spurs were sort of that fringe team the last couple of years, or even not even that, right?
I mean, last year Wemby was hurt, so it was different.
Well, fair, but even when he was healthy, it felt like these games might have been a lot closer. They wouldn't have gone undefeated in a run of games like this. So, like, I think while we can, I think we can call into question, like, whether the Spurs are truly contenders, especially with how competitive the West is going to be. But the fact that they've had a really good start, I think, I mean, it's like stating the obvious when you have Wemby, right? But it's
I'll
good
come
sense.
Out and say, I do not think the Spurs are contenders. I think this is a pretender this year for sure. And I don't really think that's a hot take. Like, to me, yes, Wemby, like, I could see him realistically looking like the best player at the end of the year. But, like, against the Nuggets or the Thunder in a playoff series, dude, they're going to take so much away from him. And I just don't think Stephon Castle, Dylan Harper, De'Aaron Fox, Devin Vassell, those guys are going to pick up the slack and, like, do anything serious in the playoffs. Like, to me, this is very much, like, I'll call back to my Mavs here, a second-year Luka situation where, like, you see someone ascending and looking like one of the best players in the league, but you know the pieces around them are just, like, not enough.
Okay, so,
do
like...
Do you still think he can, or the Spurs can be 3 or 4 in the West?
I honestly don't think so.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you mentioned five guys. They're, like, their main five people, Devin Vassell, the three guards, and Victor Wembanyama. If you look past that, the depth gets really scary really fast.
Yeah, Jeremy Sochan, please save us.
Yeah, they're like, starting Harrison Barnes and Julian Champagny right now, and they're winning, but, like, that's not conducive to long-term success.
Yeah. So, let's say they make playoffs then, right? You know, regardless how they make it, we think, like, up against one of the better teams in the West, you know, Denver, OKC, Houston, whatever. Like, do we still think it's, like, a losing in 4 or in 5? We think the team has a lot left to go still?
Do you mean, like, losing in 4 or 5?
Yeah, losing in 4 or 5.
One of those contenders?
Like, I'm asking, like, they're good, but will they be competitive when we reach, like, May and June?
I mean, I think they'll be in the playoffs. Right now, if I had to, like, say West predictions, like, I still just think Thunder, Nuggets, Rockets, and probably the Lakers are going to finish ahead of them in the regular season. But, like, if we saw, for example, a Lakers-Spurs first-round series, like, I could easily see that going to 6 or longer. Okay. And the Spurs potentially stealing it.
Got it. All right.
So that's what I would say. Like,
well,
the
Lakers are in their own way a flawed team, so you could see where the matchup might help the Spurs there out a little bit. A
lot of white chocolate down in LA right now.
Yeah. Shall we pivot to the Mavs then? Speaking of white chocolate, I guess. We got Big Cooper Flagg. You know, saving Nico Harrison, the demon himself, from, you know, one of the most, let's put it nicely, memorable trades of recent memory. You know, we've got a good front court with AD and Cooper Flagg. AD now injured, unsurprisingly.
I'll go ahead and take the reins from you here, Julian. We've got nothing but front court, and frankly, that's our problem, is this team is all wings and all bigs and almost, like, no guards. Like, outside of Max Christie and D'Angelo Russell, like, we're trying to get minutes from Ryan Nemhard, Brandon Williams, Jaden Hardy.
Oh,
man,
no.
What if we had some kind of high-level playmaker?
Can you imagine someone like that could do on this roster, dude? They could probably go to the finals.
Yeah. All of these words, like, being spoken from, you know, they're hiding tears over here in the studio, the Mavs fans.
Yeah.
Very true.
I think this is truly just going to be the season of, like, a showcase of the flawed logic of the NBA in recent years of, like, after the Timberwolves went on that run with Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns, like, and beat Jokic, it was like double big, double big. This is the new big thing. We completely ignored the reason, like, double big can even work in the first place, which is, like, elite guard play. The Timberwolves that year had Anthony Edwards, who's a top three shooting guard, and Mike Conley when he was still, like, not an old man on a cane and being able to play make. Like, double big does not work at all when you don't have a point guard, and that's what the Mavs are seeing right now.
Can we see that with the Rockets, too, by the way. You know, we were talking earlier about that.
I think the Rockets have more, like, playmaking, and also they have, like, arguably the greatest offensive player ever. Like, the Mavs star right now is Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is a better defensive player than offensive player, like, clearly.
Sure.
And especially without, like, a great playmaking guard, like, that's even worse. Quick quiz of the room right now. Where do y'all think the Mavs are in offensive rating in a small five-game sample size so far this year?
Bottom five, surely.
Bottom five's a great guess. We are number 29 out of 30, averaging 103 points per 100 possessions. I'm pretty sure in the Luka era, we were never outside of like the top eight in offensive rating for a full season.
Pro Luka, oh my days.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what we have, is like the offense is going to suck. And we kind of expected that going into the year, but we figured they could be like league average and then this team would win with defense. Honestly, I don't even see this team winning with defense right now because the Anthony Davis and Derek Lively lineups are just not working.
There isn't a lot of room for them to move, and they just are slow.
They're slow, and even like what you would expect, like their strength should be the defensive end. Wemby was straight torching these guys in the first game of the season, and then even after that, like if you just say, hey, Wemby's, you know, future GOAT, fine, whatever. We were getting cooked by the Wizards with Lively and AD healthy. Like,
yeah,
the
bad
defense has been underperforming too. They're eighth in the league right now, which is propped up by us just playing a hospital Pacer squad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this defense has been underwhelming. This offense is like almost non-existent. And we're asking a rookie Cooper Flagg, who, you know, can handle the ball and can play make a little bit, to essentially function as our point guard in the starting lineup. It is just like brutal to watch at the moment.
There's really no direction for this team right now.
No, and I think that's like another issue, is that Jason Kidd and Nico Harrison, it feels like the visions are split, because we acquired D'Angelo Russell in the offseason and Jason Kidd just does not want to give him the minutes. Like, the offense is so much better with D'Lo out there because he can actually play make competently, and Jason Kidd just does not want to play him that much for some reason. Like, I think if we decide to roll out the lineup of D'Lo, Max Christie, PJ Flagg, and AD, like, offensively, that would be good, and defensively, it'd still be great. But
he saw Lakers D'Lo. That's what it is.
Dude,
yeah. Yeah. He was watching the tape and said it. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. If you're a fan out there, don't look up D'Lo's efficiency numbers this year. That man can't.
Yeah.
He couldn't hit water on a boat in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, so, okay, so you were getting a little bit into that solution then. You know, the offense is not, there's no real spark there at the moment. So, you know, given some of these guys who can actually move the ball on offense to, like, you know, get them more minutes, basically, is what you're saying then?
Yeah, I mean, I really think it is, like, a D-low problem of he's currently playing 20 minutes a game, which is just, like, ridiculous. Like, the only two guys on the Mavs roster who I think are actually, like, capable of like kind of captaining an offense as a playmaker are D'Angelo Russell and rookie undrafted Ryan Nemhard.
Nice.
And combined, those guys are only averaging 30 minutes a game, and Nemhard isn't even going to play in every game because he's on a two-way contract. So it's like the playmaking problem is just so apparent, and I don't really see what the solution is or what the way out of this is unless we start giving D'Lo 30 plus minutes.
Yeah. So, okay. So all this being said, then it raises an interesting question, because all three of these teams are arguably on different steps of their path to success, if you want to call it that. So, which of these three teams would we all say, and let's open it up to everybody, I guess, like, which one is more equipped to meet their expectations? And those expectations, I guess, haven't been explicitly defined here. Like, should the Rockets be, you know, championship or bust? Mavs and Spurs, like, make the playoffs. Spurs maybe make a deeper run. Like, who's more equipped to meet those expectations or to exceed them?
I feel like in terms of exceeding expectations, it's probably just still the Spurs, right, Seth?
Yeah, I mean,
I would agree.
If Wemby plays like the best player in the league and all three of their guards can actually coexist, they can win a playoff round, and that would be exceeding expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not ridiculous.
Right, because the Rockets, sorry, I was just going to say, like, are probably league-wide, for the most part, expected to be the best out of these three teams this year.
For sure, going into the season, yeah.
So it's probably unfair to say, like, oh, who's going to be, you know, perform the best. I mean, you never know, right? But
yeah, because to me, like, outperforming expectations, if you're the Rockets, is basically, like, making the conference finals. And, like, do we think they're any more likely to do that based on what we've seen in the four games they've played?
Do you think that changed because of Fred's injury? Like, with Fred, do you think it was more, like, the stakes were higher?
Yes.
I think with Fred, there's a way better chance they could have, like, reached that level. But without him, it is a lot trickier.
There's such an obvious hole in this team. And so the Rockets just are now very hindered.
Yeah.
They still have a couple of years with KD and the young guys, but they should be expected to make it far into the playoffs still.
Very quickly, early trade candidates that the Rockets should be looking for if they can add someone to their backcourt.
Dude, Dude, what about a guy like Jalen Green?
Okay. And that's where we're going to wrap it up. Reason we got rid of him. From our NBA segment, first segment of the year, boys. Very nice job. We are
We're
going
back.
To move on to the next part of the show, which is our game. I will kick it to Ian to introduce that.
Thank you, Julian, and all of our NBA in-house experts. Now we're going to put them to the test in a slightly different way, and we are back with everyone's favorite segment after perhaps Around the Hedges and some of the other ones we do. It's Sports Brain Rot. All the iPad kids have been waiting for this one for, I don't know how long it's been since we did one of these, but they have been fiending, and it is Halloween weekend, and there is nothing spookier than knowing that there is an imposter in the room, which is why we are bringing back, I think, the first game we ever played on air for our first episode of this year. We are bringing back Imposter. So the way this works, we have four players. We have Garrett, Julian, Jacob, and Seth. I have texted three of them the name of an NBA, a current active NBA player. I have texted one of them that they are the imposter. They are going to go around the room, taking turns saying one word that describes the player, and their goal of the three who know the player is to correctly identify and vote out the imposter, which they can do after any round of guessing. The imposter's goal is to go unnoticed and blend in, and if they get picked out, they can win the game by correctly identifying the player. So without further ado, Garrett is going to start. We're going to go around the room this way for those of you who are in here. Let's take it away.
Ooh, I hate to do it to him, but I'm going to say ugly.
Yikes.
Brutal.
That's harsh, probably, but okay.
I'm going to add on to that. I'm going to say old.
Okay.
Where do you go from
here? We are getting real hateful.
Yeah.
Canceled for impossible.
Why are you taking so long, Julian?
Again, the point of the team, the non-imposters, is all to
right, quit stalling.
Lead
them away. Say a word.
Bro, I'm trying to explain it for the audience.
Get a move on it.
They understand it.
Chop, chop.
Past is prime.
Wow. Oh. After Jacob
That's
said
a couple
old.
Words,
yeah. Okay, I don't know. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to be a little bit nicer here and say clutch.
Oh, that's actually what I was going to say.
Okay.
I'll say shooter.
I'll say champ.
Okay. Let's go underrated.
Okay, it is for sure Julian.
Let's get this man.
It is so clearly yeah, Julian.
Absolute bum out of here.
Okay, let's give Seth the word so we've all had a full round.
Just don't say
wing.
Anything. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, do we want to call a vote?
Should we give Julian a couple more?
I want to say what type of diabolical thing.
Bro, I don't know why we're acting as if I'm the imposter,
bro. Let's go around again. Let's see what happens.
No. All right, we got to be conservative with these word choices so he doesn't get it. It's definitely not you, and I don't think it's you. I know it ain't me based on my first word.
That's true.
Okay. I'm going to say Eric Bledsoe. As a descriptor, not who the player is.
Yeah.
Because Julian is not going to get anything out of that.
Are we sure Garrett's not the the imposter, bro?
I know I said champ last time, but I'm going to say gold medalist.
Interesting.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure.
I think that is true.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
I think he might have let up a little bit there. Okay.
All right, dude, just say a word. We know you don't know it.
Okay,
it's fine.
I'll say highlight.
Get your...
All right, so give him nothing here. Give him nothing.
All right.
We could try to deceive him, too.
I'll say SEC.
SEC,
okay.
That's a good pull.
Juliet. All right, Juju, we know it's you. We're unanimous decision here. Take your shot at guessing who the player is.
Oh, man.
If he guesses it right, he wins, yeah. Even though we figured out he's the imposter.
A shooter, wing, old, and ugly, bro. Okay, this is...
That's honestly a lot to go off.
And yeah, like, you can get it off of that.
Olympic gold medal. The problem is that I'm not a ball knower, so this is...
Fox pulls this.
I've been put in a bit of an awkward position. Dang. I don't have anything.
Oh my god!
Oh, right, let's give him a hint. Put a guess in there.
I don't,
dude. You ought to be able to get this. I think
he was.
It's not a layup, but it's definitely gettable.
We can even tell you the year he won the ring if you want.
Well, I would probably get it from that, to be honest.
I would hope so, dude.
Yeah.
Dude. Okay, he just got traded this offseason. He's now on the Washington Wizards.
The Wizards.
All right, you're not.
Bro doesn't know any Wizards player.
Three.
No, I do.
Two,
bro thinks Kyle Kuzma's still on the Wizards.
Final shot.
Is it McCollum? No.
No.
Run.
It was Chris Middleton.
Oh, I did not know he was on the Wizards.
Milwaukee Bucks legend.
Yeah,
I was gonna say Fish, bro, but
he is chopped, bro. He is very.
All right, that'll do it. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Sports Brain Rot. The brains are in fact rotting. Let's get back to the real reason that you're all here: our expert analysis. We are moving on to the gridiron, America's sport, football. We are talking about the hometown professional Houston Texans. I think Houston native and Texans loyal fan Julian, do you want to take the lead on getting us started here?
Yeah, this season at times has called into question that loyal fandom you talk about, Ian. it's been an interesting season, to say the least. It's one of those where I'll be very transparent. So in preparing for this segment, I was ready to just collect all the possible like worst statistics on the team and point out what the issue is. The problem is the stats look a lot better than what the eye test has shown.
The stats do not tell the whole truth.
Yeah.
This team.
So if we were to go through some of those, we have the 19th best offense, which is not elite by any means. But
if you're a Texans fan and you've watched every game, you would not think this is like of league average offense, roughly.
Exactly, yeah. But, and then, you know, it's been well documented. Defense very good. First in the league in terms of opponent points per game. 17th in the rush. 12th in passing yards, which, again, stats, I think, making CJ Stroud look a little bit better than he has been. And I like my boy CJ, but we got to call a spade a spade. And, well, we'll get into it a little bit more in a bit. But, yeah, I mean,
let's just say that's a lot of data to throw out there, Julian.
Yeah.
To you, so Texans are 3-4 right now. This team's playoff chances are like still alive, but not looking great. To you, if it like boils down to one thing, what's been the root of the issues for them this year?
Yeah. So my initial hunch, and again, this is all eye test for anybody who's seen a lot of Texans games. It's either or been on the internet. It's going to be the offensive line or the quarterback.
Yeah.
For the quarterback, I'll just say right now, I tend to hold back too much. Like, I tend to hold back criticism on CJ Stroud, despite, just don't ask me what I was saying about him in week three when we started 0-3. But I want to bring up the fact that his stats in wins versus stats in losses are like night and day.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he has in wins against Tennessee, Baltimore, and San Francisco. Two of those teams very injured. Tennessee, one of the worst teams in the league, albeit he's had an 80% completion percentage, which is very impressive. Almost 300 yards throwing a game, 8 touchdowns, 1 pick, 120 rating, and only been sacked 4 times. That's just over once per game, which is about league average, if not a little bit better. I think it's probably unfair to put all of the blame on CJ Stroud when you have other quarterback situations around the league where you probably see some of that subpar play more consistently in the wins and the losses, right? We've seen CJ play well this year, and I must say, even though he threw a pick this past weekend against the Niners, he arguably had his best game, and he was not sacked a single time against the Niners last weekend. That's without Nick Bosa, no Fred Warner, right? But I think it does paint the picture. Now, the offensive line, on the other hand, I would also probably initially say, oh, that's the big issue. We've seen guys like Ariante Ursery and Blake Fisher, first and second year guys. Yeah, like I don't know if this is what it was, but Jacob just made like a facial expression. Like, people do not know who these people are, and there's a reason for that. They've really struggled in in their first couple years in the league. Ursery is a rookie and got thrown out to left tackle to replace Laremy Tunsil, multiple time Pro Bowler. He has not looked good. The thing is, I was shocked when I saw this. When I went on the NFL website to look at sacks allowed, Texans are like have allowed the 20th most sacks Like, in other words, according just to the raw stats, they are above average in allowing sacks. They've only allowed 15 in seven games. Now, they have had the bye week, right? But, like, even if they were allow, like, three or four, I saw, like, middle of the pack right now is, like, 19 sacks. So, at worst, they'd be middle of the pack, which honestly paints the picture. Okay, has the O-line really been that bad? Obviously, the eye test would say, yeah, I've seen our left and right tackle just be completely ran over by just random guys. And the pressure they're allowing is a ton, and CJ, we know, doesn't do as well under pressure.
Yeah. See, although I will say, I feel like I would give CJ Stroud some credit here in him only taking 15 sacks on the year, because when you actually watch the Texans, like, their offensive line looks like they're giving up a sack almost every drive is the way it feels. Like, he's getting hit so many times.
Yeah, we saw the Titan sack that Jeffrey Simmons had, where it was like the fastest sack in NFL history, right?
Just completely unblocked. Like, this offensive line is just so, so bad. And so I feel like CJ Stroud in these losses, like his stats and losses, Julian was going to get to it. He's only throwing 215 yards a game and has three touchdowns to four interceptions, which is just brutal.
Yeah.
But in so many of those games, it's like, even if he's not getting sacked, he's under constant pressure. And, like, you think of where he can go with the ball. Like, outside of Nico Collins, do we really think Dalton Schultz is, like, a great number two weapon for this team?
And that's actually the point I was going to get to, right? Where, like, I want to transition from the O-line, because the O-line is clearly an issue, right? And we haven't drafted well there the last few years. But I want to point out some of the injuries we've had. Nico Collins missed last game with a concussion, but he hasn't been great this year. No. Joe Mixon, I don't know where that guy is.
What happened to
Joe Mixon? Joe Mixon disappeared. Like, he's on the PUP list, like, physically unable to perform. And Nick Caserio, the GM, has barely, like, when asked about Joe Mixon, he's just said, like, you know, we'll see what that timeline, like, where that timeline lies. It's like, okay, we don't know anything about him. Tank Dell obviously suffered that huge injury last year. And Christian Kirk, who was meant to be, like, our number two guy that we acquired in the offseason, has played maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of the stats, again, I know the opponents haven't been great, but when Christian Kirk has played, it's not only opened up Nico Collins, but it's opened up the offense.
Interesting.
So I wonder if the injuries or the lack of playmakers on the offense has done the offensive line and the quarterback some disservice, because out there currently we have three Iowa State Cyclones at receiver. And let's just say Iowa State are not known for producing, like, wide receivers, right? No disrespect to any of the guys we have right there, but a lot of them are young and don't have a lot of experience. So I think the lack of playmakers is honestly a big part of it, even though the offensive line has been very subpar. And I would just point to the coaching. I mean, you look at some of the losses this year. I guess fumbles are individual errors, right? But, like, when we're taking penalties, like, so many penalties.
In the Bucs game in particular, I remember it felt like it was constant flags.
Exactly. And coming out from the bye, like, playing in Seattle is tough, right? But we just come off our biggest win of the season. Huge statement win against the Ravens. Could we bring it back on track? Those who watched the Monday Night Football game against the Seahawks, there was nothing. Like, that game was 27-19. It could have been 40-10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not as close as the score made it look.
Yeah. So I think coaching is a big part of it. There's not a lot of discipline. There's guys getting penalties. There's linebackers wanting to, like, slam guys to the ground just for the sake of it, and I don't understand why they're doing it. So I think what this team is going to go as far as the discipline can take it, and as far as some of these other guys,
the defense can carry them as
well. Yeah, and the defense, we haven't talked a lot about them, but it's, you know, they've Will Anderson, Derek Stingley, all these guys have had great years. So yeah, it, like we mentioned, first in the league in points allowed, and, like, for a while there it wasn't really close either.
Yeah, I mean, y'all shut down the Rams in week one. You made Baker Mayfield struggle. Like, you put a lid on Mac Jones, which is actually kind of saying something this year.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, and then, like, I know JSN had a big game against us, but that offense didn't look particularly electric.
Yeah. I mean, Darnold turned the ball over, like, three times.
Yeah.
I remember there was a stat from that game of, like, the Seahawks lost the turnover battle by, like, two or three.
Yeah, like, when does that ever happen? When does that happen, man? And that's why I think, like, coaching is one of those things that's hard to judge, because you only have the stats on the sheet to tell you how the players did. But it's things like that that make me wonder, like, what coaching, like, what's happening behind the scenes? What's happening at practice in the middle of the week? Like, are these guys being told, like, don't jump off sides? Like, enough with the false start penalties, you know? Like, it just seems like, and I put it this way to some friends earlier in the year, I've seen highly mediocre Texans teams with really good defenses, like those Brock Osweiler, Matt Schaub teams. I've seen electric offenses under Deshaun Watson, and even that C.J. Stroud that first year, we had a really good offense. I don't think I've seen, and I've seen really bad teams, by the way, as a Texans fan, obviously. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a more frustrating and a more stupid team than this. And again, if for whatever reason Texans players are ever listening to this ever, you know, no disrespect, but it just seems like a lot of the stuff that's happening on the field is just very poor decision making, and you wonder if it just goes down to the coaching and those players being drilled at practice. So it's a very frustrating team. It's a very confusing team. One that I'm still waiting to see a statement win from. Sunday against the Broncos, even though Pat Surtain is out, I think it's huge.
Yeah.
I think it'll bring us back to 500, some momentum, a big win at home. That will be a big
game.
I don't think we do. No, we beat the Niners last week, and there was some hype going. I think the Broncos, while I don't believe in Bo Nix, are a legit team overall, and they'll make it tough for us. It'll be an ugly game, but one that I think the Broncos should win ultimately.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about the Texans' flaws a lot, and the division is pretty much out of the question given the performance of the Colts. Do you think playoffs are even a chance or still alive yet for the Texans?
Yeah, I'll kick it to Jacob for a bit, because he found some interesting stuff on the Jags and the Colts that maybe might shift our perspective a little bit, right?
Yeah, so when you think of the AFC South, like before the year, you're like, I've seen preseason rankings of the Colts maybe only getting like 2 wins.
They were bad.
Colts
were going to be like a bottom feeder
season.
Yeah.
And now they're all what, 7-1?
So that is just Jones.
Indiana Jones. That is just absolutely mind-boggling to see that. And now you're wondering like, how are teams going to be able to even compete for the division? So right now the question is, can someone in the AFC South besides can even contend for first place right now? And so obviously you throw the Titans out the picture.
Yeah, Titans, like they're done. Yeah,
it's gone. But when you have some interesting situation with the Jaguars and the Texans, who still haven't played the Colts at all. So if they can take those games, there is still a chance. Like then again,
yeah, division like, matchups are big.
So, like the Jaguars, there's a chance. Like they beat the Chiefs, the 49ers, and although the 49ers aren't a huge accomplishment, they beat the Texans as well. And you got to also remember the Colts still have a very difficult schedule remaining. Like their opponent's average win percentage right now is above 500, 554 to be exact. And so the Colts don't have that hard of a schedule.
Who doesn't?
The Jaguars. The Jaguars. The Jaguars do not have that difficult of a schedule. But then again, they've also gotten spanked by teams like the Rams and like the Seahawks.
They're equally as frustrating as us, to be honest. If I'm a Jags fan, I don't know what this team is about. And I would say Trevor Lawrence has even been more frustrating than Houston. But I would say, or than C.J. Stroud, I would say it's a difficult one, right? Because the Colts have been super consistent. Jonathan Taylor's running the ball super well. They're playing really good football. But, you know, looking at the records, like the Texans and the Jags do still have a chance because, as you said, they do still have both games against the Colts left. And whatever you want to say, those division games are always close. And the Jags have always found way. Like the Jags seem to have the Colts number in past years. Texans-Colts games are pretty close usually. So I wouldn't say we're out of it, but I would be surprised if anybody other than Indy ends up with the AFC South crown by the end of the year, which is insane.
I would certainly second that. Like, mathematically, it's possible just because of how many division games remain. But realistically, I see no world in which the Jags catch up to the Colts. Like, this team looks so good. They have multiple, like, statement wins, a win against the Broncos, a win against the Chargers, where they looked significantly better than the Chargers, by the way.
I mean, there's no reason why the Colts shouldn't be 8-0 right now. Like, they easily could have beat
the
Rams.
They lost to the Rams on that crazy, like, that 2-2 Atwell, like, play, right?
2-2 Atwell, and then Adonai Mitchell giving up that.
That was wild.
So, they should easily be 8-0.
Yeah, they could be. But, I mean, I look at the Texans' schedule, and it's a lot of AFC South, right? We play the Chiefs at Arrowhead. Okay, probably a tough game, but I mean, at Chargers could be tough, right? But, you know, we played them well last year in the playoffs. And then we play at home versus the Cardinals and the Raiders. I'm not saying the Texans are juggernauts. You've just heard me rant about them. But I'm saying if we can beat the people we're supposed to beat,
you could maybe go 8-9.
Yeah, okay. No, but I'm saying we can be, like, pretty competitive, you know? And
you
if
be in the hunt.
Yeah, and keep in mind, the final game of the season, and the Colts will probably be far ahead, so I don't think this will be for the division. But let's say, you know, for sake of argument, Texans were to go on a run, I could see us, you know, the Bills have weaknesses on defense that I think makes our struggles on offense a little bit less prevalent, right? I think aside from at Chiefs, every game on the schedule remaining is winnable. Even that Broncos one, even though I don't think the Broncos, like, is, you know, I think the Broncos should win, but the rest of the game should be winnable. I guess at Indy is tough if they keep playing the way they're playing. But all I'm saying is I don't think the AFC South is totally done, but I think Indy should have it.
Yeah, wrapped. you're an optimistic Texans fan.
I'm definitely not. I'm just looking at it.
You were so doom and gloom in the analysis of them, and then you're like, every game is winnable on the schedule still.
I mean,
if you look at the games, we haven't been like
theoretically any game is winnable.
Well, yeah,
but like,
I know.
If
but
you
the,
actually predicted realistically where the Texans are
the Seahawks
finish.
Game was less close than the score indicated, right? But the Texans, if you look at D'Amico Ryans' time here, a lot of the games we've played, losses, wins have been close. We've rarely blown teams out. We've rarely been blown out. A lot of these games are close.
I think that's just the D'Amico style of football of, like, it's going to be a hard-fought game because the Texans
right,
are
but D'Amico's going to be there still by the end of the year, right? So what I'm saying is so long as these games are close.
I mean, I think y'all could theoretically lose by one score to a lot of these teams.
Okay.
But I still think you're going to lose to most of them.
I mean, like, if they go, let's say hypothetically, they take these next three games, right? The Broncos, as you're saying, without passers. Is like you said, it's a winnable game. Obviously, like, more so on the winnable than, like, just throwing out the word winnable is not.
Sure. But, like, so we'd be at 6-4, right?
6-4, and then you guys have a difficult stretch with the Bills, the Colts, and the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think if we can
bounce back from those possible three losses.
I think if we go 2-1 in that stretch of three, which I'm not saying is likely, but if we can go 2-1 in that stretch, we're looking good because the rest of the games are pretty manageable. But
right.
Okay.
To sum it all up,
yeah.
Julian, Texans mid, but still hope. Let's transition to the story of the week, I would say, which has been this World Series. Probably one of the best in recent memory, especially if you're watching Monday night for the 18-inning masterclass. Jacob, as the resident baseball expert for Against the Grain, how would you sum it all up?
And Dodgers fan.
Oh,
okay. So to start it off, the Dodgers are stuck in the mud, both offensively and in the series, down 3-2. The Dodgers are back against the wall for the first time this postseason. You know, they swept the Brewers, which came to everyone's surprise. They beat the Phillies 3-1, and they swept the Reds. So it's like maybe there is like some sort of mysterious force why a World Series champion hasn't repeated since the Yankees did so from 1998 to 2000. And like Dave Roberts has done a very good job of trying to like to play to our strengths. But now in this like World Series, we've had to move around the lineup and trying to get it started, but like with no avail. Like these past three games, these past two games, we've only been able to muster up three runs, which with combined with the shaky bullpen isn't enough to turn around this tide. But on a more positive note, let's talk about that historic game three. And so to commemorate that night, I wrote a wonderful haiku poem. It was Will Boone Klein that saved me hours of sleep. Otani's on base.
That,
you're welcome.
That might be one
goodness.
Of the worst things I've ever heard in my life.
We
got
to remember that for the end of the year. Award.
Yeah.
Holy.
Okay.
Okay. Who gave this guy his own segment, man?
Okay, William Boone Klein absolutely saved us. We would already been gone if it not been for that magical man throwing four innings out of the bullpen, never thrown more than two innings in his life, and coming out to throw four innings in a very deciding game. I mean, they were telling me that night that 70% of those that took a 2-1 series lead went on to win the World Series, and it's not looking like that right now, but it's not over till it's over, you know? And so, it was a very beautiful game. Like, you just had to be there, you know, to really feel the sentiment at 2 a.m. in the morning when Freddie Freeman hit that walk-off home run. And, I mean, my sleep was down, but my happiness was up, you know?
Oh, my God.
And as I was trudging to my 8 a.m. the next morning, I really thought to myself and reflected on the masterpiece that I watched the previous night. Will the Dodgers bullpen ever see a masterclass like that again? Will any player ever reach base 9 times in a single game? Will Otani's aura ever run out? But then again, this excitement was short-lived as we lost back-to-back games and are now in quite the pickle against the Jays. The outlook is kind of bleak for my boys in blue, but the game's not over. Tonight, Friday, the Yoshinobu Yamamoto will be pitching. And if anyone is on, if you want anyone on the mound in this situation, it has to be Yoshi. So anticipate seeing another pitching gem from him. It won't be easy against a talented Jays team, but it should be a great game. The Jays need to keep doing what they're doing. The Dodgers just need to get more offensive output during the critical moments of the game in order to bring back the chip to LA.
That's beautiful, man. Jays in six.
Thank you, Jacob, for that segment of all time on the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. We are going to wrap up our show with the way that we always do. We are bringing back predictions. If you recall from last year when you were with us, we, a la College Game Day, end every show by going around and picking a few of the biggest matchups from across the Houston or just generally sports world for the week. So we have three that we're going around real quick and give you our 2 cents on. And we do keep track of everyone's records and performance. I don't have last year's in front of me, but I'm sure we will update you at some point on those. And we will keep you posted on how the whole staff is doing as we go through this year. So to start it off, we're going to start with Monday Night Football. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to Buffalo, New York to take on Josh Allen and the Bills. If I recall correctly, this was one of the best regular season games last year when the Chiefs went to Buffalo. I think it might have been on Sunday night. Just absolute thriller. I think the Bills won by one. I am going to take Bills Mafia as the 12th man, giving them the edge in the cold. Give me the Bills.
Just like Rashee Rice, I think they run him over. Give me the Chiefs over the Bills.
I mean, it is still the regular season, so give me the Bills.
I sadly have to pick the Chiefs. They are the best team in football right now.
As usual, I'll be picking the Chiefs to win this.
I am picking the Chiefs as well.
All right, our staff was pretty split on this one. We have a few people who weren't here. They were kind of divided between Bills and Chiefs. One matchup that was a little less divided in our predictions is Monday's NBA tilt here in H-Town between the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets. I'm sure several people in this room will be quite interested in that matchup. I am going to take the Rockets. I just think they've been the better team so far.
I will be at that game, courtesy of K-True producer Brandon, and I'm going with my Mavs.
Give me a right shift to lead the Rockets to victory.
Okay. I will take...
That's Reed Shepard, by the way.
Oh, I will take the Rockets also.
Mavs by a billion.
Definitely the Rockets.
Just in case the people at home are wondering, I believe every staff member who is not on air with us right now submitted the Rockets as their pick. So do with that what you will. The last game that we're going to predict is the aforementioned World Series Game 6. That's being played on Friday night. By the time this airs, that game will be over, but I promise it is almost 4 p.m. on Friday. The game has not started yet. These are true blind predictions. The Jays are up 3-2. This game is in Toronto. I am going to take the Dodgers to force a Game 7. I trust Yamamoto, and I feel like these things always go to Game 7.
I'm with you there, Ian. Yamamoto's tough. Give me the Dodgers.
It's a beautiful day for Dodger baseball. We're going to take this dub and to force Game 7 and take it on all the way.
Yeah, I don't know who this Yamamoto guy is. We're going with the Toronto Blue Jays to respect Canada's
whoa.
Best.
Whoa.
Vladdy.
Whoa. We cannot take the slander, yeah. Bro.
Whoa, Vladdy. Vladdy.
This
is successful rage bait. Vladdy has taken the win. And by the way, I'm just going to correct what I said earlier. The Houston Football Texans will beat the Denver Broncos on Sunday. Book it. You heard it here first. Bo Nix is throwing 4 picks. CJ Stroud, perfect passer rating. Nico Collins, 3 touchdowns. Let's get it.
It's quite the masterclass to follow up, Julian.
we might need to clip that for next week and review how the Texans did.
I'll be going with the Dodgers. It's too good of a story to pass up.
Yeah, give me the Blue Jays, Vladdy Jr., World Series MVP.
So most of our staff did pick the Dodgers in this one, but we do have a couple people who weren't here who went for the Blue Jays. So this one could go either way. Will we see you tomorrow night for Game 7 or not? Remains to be seen. Enjoy watching the Fall Classic and America's pastime while it lasts. I know many of the people in this room have a general disdain for baseball, but a few of us enjoy it, and we hope you at home enjoy a great playoff game as well. That is going to wrap it up for our first episode of the fall semester of Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM. I cannot thank you enough for listening to us either on the radio bright and early at 7 a.m. or on Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever else you happen to find us. We are grateful for your listenership. Stay safe out there. Wear your seatbelts. Eat your veggies. Have a great Halloween weekend, and don't get spooked too badly. We will see you next week.
We back!